And now, ladies and gentlemen, would you all please join me in giving a huge AccuPaw welcome to tonight's main speaker, John Doe from Anytown, USA. I've always wanted to do this. Aki, aki, aki. All right, I blew it. I did. My name's John Doe. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I'm from Anytown, USA. And I'm grateful to be alive and sober and at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And like Lindsay, who did a terrific job, I consider it a privilege and an honor to be asked to do anything, whether it's picking cigarettes at the urinals or speaking in front of you lovely people. And as my friend Joe likes to say, I never saw such a nice-looking bunch of sick people in my whole life. And the lists of diseases you can get in this place just terrified me. I don't know what the hell you guys are doing after curfew. And I got to tell you, I was walking around the campus here, lost. Thank you, Kansas, for those wonderful directions. And I hit just about every convention in this place, and you guys are just about the best-behaved bunch of people out of here. So I don't know what they're drinking in those other convention halls, but, yeah, wow. What a long, strange trip it's been for me, boys and girls. I'm looking around you, and I see these young faces, and I got to tell you, I don't know what to say, really. My story has gotten so big, I don't believe it. That's the truth. I want to qualify myself first by saying that, you know, I was up at 1 a.m. You know, I teach an online course. I'm getting my doctorate right now out of a university in Cambridge. So they make me teach undergraduates at 1 a.m. I got to wake up. It's 9 a.m. in London. And then it's 4 o'clock, and I'm all juiced up because I love the sound of my own voice, so I go to the gym. And I'm training. I do adventure cycling, you know, like my next big trip is I'm getting airdropped into the outback, and I got to claw my way out 2,000 miles, my bicycle, a tranquilizer gun, and an SOS radio. So I got to, yeah, as if I haven't been through enough, you know. So anyway, so I Thursday's my big spin day, so I spin for 3 hours. And then, like, I'm all hopped up, and I go to work. And I wanted to get my head in the right space today because I knew I'd be tired. It was a tough week at work, and I've taken a day off tomorrow. So I wanted to relax. I had the whole day planned. I was going to listen to, well, I don't want to say the names here, but there's a spiritual teacher I've been working with who is just, he's amazing. The things I've done in meditation are just beyond description. I'm just so blessed beyond my capacity to receive anymore. This program, just when you think that it's the best it can get, God decides to drop you with another billion-dollar gift. And I'm working with a guy who works with thousands of people, and I wanted to listen to him to calm down. And I was leaving my health club, you know, and I'm not from the West Coast. I don't know if you can tell from my accent, but I ain't local. And, you know, in a spirit of anonymity, my sponsors at gunpoint is making me use the pseudonym John Doe, and from Anytown, USA. But I live near a place that rhymes with Retardo Beach, which pretty much accurately describes a couple of my neighbors, by the way, but that's another story. So I'm going to the on-ramp to work this morning. I work about 20 miles away, and there's two kids, about 20 years old, with backpacks with the AA circle and triangle. Now, that circle and triangle is sacred to me. I hauled everything I own from the East Coast to the West Coast, cross-country. I broke down, side of the road, 3 hours, nothing. 911, nobody wanted to come help me. I took a tube of toothpaste out of the truck, and I put the AA circle and triangle in the back windows, both sides. Help, need meeting. I had somebody stop every 5 minutes. They took my number. They irritated me all the way to California. Wouldn't leave me alone. This program never lets you down. So I see these two kids with the backpack circles and triangles. Help, need a lift to San Diego. They got to be going to Aki, Aki, Aki. You like the way I set that one up? So were you guys going to the convention? What, dude? And so I'm on the line here for this favor. All right, guys. Tell you what, it's 9 o'clock. If you're at my office at 5 o'clock, I'll get you a ride to San Diego. do the right thing and the right thing happens. You know, one of the greatest lessons I learned in AA is that life isn't a search for happiness. If you're searching for happiness, you're already off the path. Search for right living. Do the right thing. Search for that. Look for the right thing to do in every situation, no matter how much it hurts, and then watch how the universe catches up and pats you on the back. I don't know where the hell I came from, but that's the way my life is today. So, sure enough, at 5 o'clock, dude, remember me? I forgot all about you, actually, but okay. So I go downstairs, and there they are, you know, like Jethro and the Beverly Hillbillies. These guys got backpacks, and their hair's all akimbo, and, all right, San Diego, we're about to, we don't care. All right, get in the car. So, and again, now I have to get my head in the right place because I'm speaking in front of you nice, clean people. So, I have a busy job. We'll get into that later. I mean, I have a lot of weight on my shoulders, and I'm flying to Tokyo tomorrow. So, I'm getting my bags ready in my head. I'm grading exams. I got my dissertation. I got a pack of crazy people, and these two psychos want to ride with me in the car. So, all right. We have a responsibility sign. I did some service at the, you guys mind if I take my jacket off?
No.
I thought they were going to drag me off the stage. I showed you I owed a jacket. I did my job. Where were we? Oh, yeah, psychopaths in the car. Right. So these guys want to come to San Diego now. I've been up since 1 o'clock. I sweated 3 gallons of water in the gym. My boss yelled at me all day long. And I wanted to listen to my spiritual teacher, but no. These two psychos wanted to ride to San Diego. AA taught me you never break your word. You never break your word, right? And that responsibility pledge, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, not when any alcoholic, when anyone anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA to be there. For that, I am responsible. My sponsor is screaming at me in the back of my head, I can't say no, get in the car. All right, so we get out to the, I don't know what the heck it is. I'm in California here and I still get confused. We're on one of the highways with numbers. And we're heading south, and kid says, you mind if I smoke? I don't care if you burn. Do what you want. And then I hear this noise in the back. And a smell, a plastic smell, and I said, I know this smell. This is a familiar smell. It has an ambiance and a long finish and an almond bittery taste. And kind of like what's sort of like a Union Carbide, you know, afterglow. Oh, that is not a substance that's legal. I turn around, what are you doing? Dude, you said it was okay. I go, would you mind throwing a stem out the window, please? And he actually had to think about that. Now think about that for a minute. Here's a kid, he's got nothing in his pocket, and it's a choice between getting someplace else, and I know that feel, you know, and my mission was to talk to these two kids. Now, I doubt I made any difference in their lives, but I made sure they got some food in their stomachs, and I told them my story, and one of those kids asked me for my phone number in that parking lot, and he said he wants to call me later. I doubt he will. For every 100 times I hand out my phone number, maybe I get a phone call. For every 100 phone calls I get, maybe one guy will follow up. For every 100 guys that follows up, maybe one will show up to my house. For every 100 guys that shows up to my house, one will bring a book. For every, you know, and it keeps going. And I've still sponsored 3,000 people, right? So the moral of the story is keep chopping wood. You never know when your splinters are going to ignite. Where the hell did that come from? I got to start writing this down. That's good stuff. I better get sober here before we all fall asleep. I have a boring story. I want to tell you this last one, and then we're going to... San Diego, right? Love San Diego. I was here once, and I didn't think I was allowed back. I want to tell you why. I ran for political office not that long ago. It was very close until I realized, my personality, and then nobody wanted to vote for me at the end. But I did pretty good there for a while, and they had me put my story together real quick because I had to sanitize if we got my recovery out. First rule of damage control is get the story out first. If you get it out first, we control the story, and we got it out first. And they had me put my biography together. And I had to write my life. And think about it. I mean, a moral inventory is one thing. It's not your life story, by the way. If your sponsor's telling you it's your life story, hit them over the head with the book. It's not your life story. Nobody cares about your life story. It's what's screwing up your life is what we care about now. But chapter one, it's called The Sandbox. I actually had to write this. And it described my personality and pretty much the rest of my life. Now, I grew up on the Brooklyn waterfront between the Marine Barracks, the Brooklyn Navy Yard, the Brooklyn Army Terminal, Fort Jay, the Gowanus Expressway. Anybody see Last Exit to Brooklyn? Boy, that went over like a lead balloon. Anyway, that's about my grandma. If you ever see that. So that's my neighborhood. So it's like, how's your sister? Screw your mother. You know, that kind of thing. It was just constant bickering and fighting. So when I was 10 years old, I knew how to curse like a Marine Corps drill sergeant. I thought that was normal. You know, it's sarcasm. And sarcasm is the language of the Irish in the Brooklyn waterfront, you know. So when I was about 10, my mother, you know, got sick, and they sent me out to San Diego to stay with my step-grandmother, I guess she's called. And she was the chief nurse of some San Diego Naval Hospital, something or other. I don't know what the heck it was, some big place. And everyone wanted to kiss her butt, so they set up the biggest play date in history for my first day. So they put me, right, from Brooklyn, in a sandbox with 30 little blonde-haired angels from California. The toughest kid lasted 3 minutes. They all ran out of there screaming and crying. And that's pretty much the story of my life. That didn't go over the way I was hoping it would go over, but all right. Let's start over again. My name's John Dahl. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 25th, 1994, and I never say that in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because time don't mean shit, in case anybody told you. It doesn't mean a thing. What matters is what you did today. How did you act today? How did I treat my admin? How did I treat my students? Did I call my mother? Did I call my sponsor? Did I help a stranger? That's what matters today. Anybody can put coins on a keychain. A lot of things happened to me this year. I've survived a lot. This, by any stretch of the imagination, has been the most difficult year of my life. And I am so grateful to God and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for carrying me on to such greater and higher heights that at a meeting this year, I took my keychain off, the AA medallion off my chain. I just threw it into the street. They're absolutely meaningless to me now. I'm just so grateful. Each day is a gift. My sponsor is David Joyce. His sobriety date's July 4th, 1951. His sponsor was Bill Wilson. My sponsor was with Bill when he died his last. Bill died of emphysema on his knees. My sponsor's right next to him. I don't say that to impress anybody, but you have the right to know who you're listening to and who I listen to on a daily basis. He's one of the surviving. I think there's two of the first 100 that are surviving. He's one of them. His story's in a second book. My story's in a Japanese big book right now. We'll get to that in a little while. True story, and it's really freaky what happened. I don't know what I don't know. I don't even know how to explain that one. I need 3 years to explain how that trip to Japan took off. But anyway, so you know, I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York, and like Lindsay, you know, I can't blame my alcoholism, my family. I had some horrible things happen to me when I was a kid. I mean, my father did things to me that they put people in jail for. My mother was really just a sick woman trying to keep up with the world. And I was a very angry, I was always the weird kid. Sum up my childhood real quick. I got kicked out of the best high school in the country. 5,000 students a year graduated from there. I had the second lowest average in history. Right, they graduated 400,000 kids. I had the second lowest average in history and the second highest IQ in history. All right, me and another kid tested off the scale. All right, they were so certain that I was a retard, they tested me twice. And, you know, I had like a 32 average or something, and they finally kicked me out. And I graduated from some local school, which was a drag. The real problem was I had a hole inside of me that was so big, I couldn't fill it up, right? And, you know, when Lindsay talked about softball, my first attempt to fill a hole, as I look back, was comic books. You know, when I discovered Archie and Jughead, I read 100 comic books a day. See, I got some Archie and Jughead fans back here. Then I discovered Twinkies, shot up to about 350 pounds. I looked like a basketball when I was 9 years old. Right? Then I discovered Dirty Pictures. And, you know, all I'm going to say is the next 3 years my right arm was in a sling. And that didn't fill the hole, no pun intended. Now you know why I got to go by. I'd never come up here with my real name. Forget about it. So after the cast came off, I discovered that there were real girls that would be happy to give you hands if you knew how to talk. And that didn't work either. All kidding aside, what really happened was I tore my way through hundreds of relationships. I wouldn't even call them relationships. I just tore through hundreds of lives like a tornado, like it says in her book. And I did it for a variety of reasons. I did it to get back at my mommy. I did it because, whatever the reasons were, they're in my inventory. You have yours, I have mine. What's the difference? We're all driven by the same basic parts of self and the four basic flaws, right? So, you know, I just did it to pride, ego, you know, self-esteem. I mean, I was just an animal. I got into college. I mean, I was dating five girls at a time. I mean, how much can you eat? You know, and I was smoking four packs of cigarettes a day, and you know, I was drinking. You know, but I was just drinking, and you know, I got to my second year, my 40th college, before I realized that I have a problem. So I'll never forget this. I saw Officer and a Gentleman. I go, that's it. I'm going to be a naval aviator. That's it. Okay, this is the way to go. I never looked at the fact that I had like a 0.0 GPA, and I got kicked out of every school I ever went to, and, you know, I had a four-pack-a-day habit, and, you know, and the list just goes on forever. Nothing on the good side, everything on the bad side. But an amazing thing happened. Now, alcoholics are amazing people. I knuckled down. I buckled up, whatever it is you call it. I hunkered down, and I just concentrated, and I got straight A's. I got A after A after A. However, this is the thing to remember. This is how you know if you got what I got, right? The more... I love this when people say, you know you're an alcoholic if your life gets better the moment you stop drinking. Bullshit. When I stop drinking, my hair gets too tight. When I stop drinking, I get pissed. And I mean, I hate everybody for lengths of time. And no matter how you look at me, I plot revenge for the rest of my life. Kind of like how I felt when those two psychopaths left my car. Right? So, you know, I managed to go 2 or 3 years without drinking. But a funny thing happens, you know. I had to fill that God-sized hole. So I turned to everything and anything, whether it was sex, whether it was cigarettes, whether it was food, whether it was God. I got into a science fiction kick. I was reading 3 or 4 science fiction books a day. I mean, I was escaping. It was just on so many different levels. I was trying to run away from... me. And that's really all this thing is, boys and girls, running away from what's inside. I love page 55. You know, there's a guy out of Las Vegas. I hate Vegas, but I love this guy. And, you know, he always talks about something. And, you know, I wish I had more time. A couple of years ago, I had been clawing and scratching and itching to say something. You know, and I have a sober blog, you know, that I run. And it's not an AA blog, it's just my experiences. And, you know, I've done a lot of things in sobriety. I've studied Aikido, I've become a samurai, I've studied Dakota Bushido, you know, I've learned Chinese, I've studied the Tao Te Ching. I've done a lot of things as a result of Alcoholics Anonymous. But I've been scratching and itching and clawing to get at a thought that had just been just driving me for years. And I couldn't quite put it into words. And then one day it hit me that inside all of us is the power. Right, the power to recover from alcoholism. Inside all of us. We're born with it. And all of us have it. There is God in everybody. My job is to look for the God deep down inside everybody, because it's there. I don't care who it is. If it's a lady in a supermarket, a newcomer coming through the door. It says it on page 55, right? Deep down inside every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by pomp, calamity, or worship of other things, right? But deep down inside, it is there. It is only there that it can be found. In the final analysis... there he is, right? In other words, God is always there, but he's always in the last place we look. Right here, right? The Tao Te Ching says, if you want to discover the universe, don't leave your backyard. Big Book says it like this. You know, the AA really is nothing amazing, except it's the first time anybody ever thought to write all this stuff down. This is really an amalgamation of every spiritual principle that has ever saved anybody's ass over the last 5,000 years. That's all it is. Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in my opinion, is a book about God, the solution to alcoholism, which is why I introduced myself as a recovered alcoholic, not because I'm better than anybody, but because I have achieved, through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, a loving sponsor, the God of my understanding, the highest rank and badge of grade anybody could make in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a child of God, first class, just like you, and you, and you. No better, no worse. What time am I supposed to stop? Because I'm just lost, man. I'm on Tokyo time now. How much time I got? 5, 10, 15? All right. So let me run through the numbers here and tell you, you know, why I'm here. You don't even know if I'm an alcoholic yet. All right, so I drank like a bottle of scotch a day. That counts, right? And then I stopped, and I ate a lot of Twinkies and read books through college, right? And then one day, I was about to go on, climb up a bell tower with a shotgun, so I just wanted one drink, just one, to take the edge off, right? And I took the edge off for the next 7 years. Dropped out of college, and left the Navy at the altar. Not that they were going to take me, but I left the Navy at the altar, and I just started tending bar. And I love scotch. I love scotch so much, to this day, I would suck it out of a mop. I love scotch that much. I love Johnny Walker Black, all the boys, the Dewar's Highlander. I love Highland Scotch, Lowland Scotch, Campbell's Islay's. I mean, I can go on forever about scotch. It's a good thing we're not talking about alcohol tonight. And, you know, I got a job as a bartender. You know, the reason why I started tending bar was, you know, all the Navy movies I watched, you know, they all drank scotch, and they all hit them in torpedo tubes. And I figured if I'm going to be in the Navy, I got to learn to drink scotch. And I drank it, and I loved it, and it got worse and worse. And it got to the point where I couldn't hold a job, you know. I was a great bartender. I worked in some of the glitziest joints in New York. The line on me was, you know, great guy, good with the customers, knows his business, but you can't pay him. You get the money, you never see him again. I lost 52 jobs in 7 years, hand to God. 52 jobs in 7 years. And I didn't remember. And I remember when I had 90 days, I got hit by the IRS. I think they hang out in beginners meetings. And think about it. It's a perfect place. Them and, like, the Warren Squad, like those bail bonds people you see on TV, those psychos with the pink cars. But I got a notice when I had 90 days, and this is when I knew I had a shot. When I had 90 days, I worked for a gangster back in New York, a very powerful guy. Give you a hint. His father-in-law had his throat cut in a barbershop in the 50s. That's how powerful his family was. And he showed me the letter, and I was washing dishes at the time. I had 90 days. And he says, the IRS says you're never going to make any money ever. You're 100% garnished for the rest of your life. You owe $117,000. You want a new social security number? This is what the guy said to me. Do you want a new social security? Just like a gangster movie. Do you want a new social security number? We'll give you a driver's license. You know, no problem. Only in New York could this happen. And I looked at the guy, and I heard this small, squeaky voice come out of me and say, no. I'm not going to run anymore. It's starting to sound like Towley a little bit from hanging out with these... It's these two guys from San Diego. You want to get high? So let me backtrack a little bit. So, you know, I spent 7 years bouncing in and out of AA, drinking, and I wound up in a cardboard box drinking Listerine in Brooklyn. And I lived on top of a hill right next to a pollution plant that burned methane. And in Brooklyn, they call that the perpetual fart because the lights are always on there. So I had a view of a perpetual fart in a box, you know. And I really thought I had it going on. This is why I don't trust my own thinking. I really thought I had it going on because I had a cord that ran from the lamp to the box. And when I had visitors, right, you had a choice. You could have the heater or you could have the radio, but you couldn't have both because you blow out the lamp bulb, you know. So I didn't have many visitors, you know, needless to say. But seriously, you know, the last 6 months, you know, I was drinking mouthwash because it was all I can afford, and I was doing other things that we really shouldn't talk about in AA because it's destroying our primary purpose. I was 117 pounds. It's half my current body weight. I'm in pretty good shape now for an old man. And I had scurvy, by the way, which is a lack of vitamins and rickets, and I had lice and a whole bunch of other stuff, and I was bleeding out of places you don't want to see blood came out of. I had seven heart attacks. Wow. That's God's talking right there. I had seven heart attacks on May 25th, 1994, and I consider that to be a divine tap on the shoulder. I'm not going to say that God spoke to me, but I had a white light experience, and what I heard was not yet. And I was resuscitated three times. I was pronounced dead at the scene, again in the ambulance, and then at the hospital. And the last time they resuscitated me, I heard, not yet. And I don't know if that was the surgeon screaming or what, but I woke up the next day handcuffed to a wall at Lutheran Medical Center in Brooklyn. My mother had hired a leg breaker. My stepfather used to work for the Longshoremen's Union, so he had lots of friends in the neighborhood, if you know what I mean. And this guy named was Vinny, and Vinny's job was to keep me in that hotel room for 2 weeks and break my legs if I tried to get a drink. That's a true story. And Vinny would have broke my legs, and thank God for Vinny. So I woke up, was handcuffed to a wall, and I was bleeding from a place you don't want to bleed from. And the man who's become my AA sponsor walked in and goes, "So, David, do you believe you're powerless now?" Yeah. What's next? That's it. That's it. Who here has 90 days or less? Raise your hands. Woo. My people right here. What's next? That's the question that makes all the difference between winning and losing, between living and dying. What's next? What's next is God. That's it. Everything else is bullshit. There is nothing after what's next. He did no ranting. He did no preaching, like I'm doing right now, actually, now that I think about it. In a matter-of-fact way, he said, "Listen, kid, I haven't listened the last 3 years, and ooh, you're full of shit. I know it. You know it. You're going to die. Look at you. You're dying right now. You know, you want to run out and drink. I'm sober 30 years. I actually have people that care about me. I actually have a home and a place to sleep and children and, you know, like real stuff. And I just found that I got throat cancer, and I'm going to die in 6 months, kid. And I want to drink so bad I can taste it. Do you mind if I tell you my story?" "Yeah, sure. I mean, my calendar was wide open that day, so I listened to him." I was on my fourth step the next day, and it was an envelope. It wasn't the Great American Novel, but it was a list of my bile, my filth, all the things that have been eating my lunch. At the end of 14 days, when they released me from that hospital, I was on my ninth step. I had $2 in my pocket. He drove me to the first stop. Verone Shark was into for 25 large. He made me give this guy a dollar. I found out later that he was Dead as Anonymous sponsor. He knew this guy wasn't going to hurt me. He had the whole thing set up. But I had $2 in my pocket. I handed one guy a dollar, and I bought a bagel. He put me into a homeless shelter in Brooklyn. I stayed at the Atlantic Avenue Men's Shelter for 1 year. It's important for you to hear this, because when you hear the end of the story, I want to show you the heights that Alcoholics Anonymous can take you if you're willing to do the work. Because you gotta pray like everything depends on God, but you gotta work like everything depends on you. That's really all I have to say about that. So I spent the year at the shelter, and Joe lasted the whole year, and Joe passed away with throat cancer at the end of that year, and I was so angry at God for that. You know, how could he do this to me? I'm on my ninth step, and you're back in my life, and I'm starting, and the only man I ever loved dies of cancer. Well, that night, my first anniversary, I hocked up a loogie that was black, and they took me to Sloan Kettering, and I had cancer. And I've been carrying that cancer. You know, never forget this. I remember looking at my new sponsors, my sponsors, hey, well, how could God do this to me? I mean, through the boxes and the Listerine and to take the, how could he do this to me? And he said the most beautiful thing. He goes, you know, maybe God knew this was coming. Maybe Joe was here to show you that you can die with grace and dignity. He goes, now I'm in charge. You asked me to be your sponsor, I'm going to sponsor you. I don't want to hear about your cancer anymore. I don't give a shit. He goes, I want to hear about what you're going to do for the next sick and suffering alcoholic. Now, we're going to take you to the hospital. We're going to check you in. You're going to get what they give you, but you're going to go to the detox every day, and you're going to take this book, and you're going to get them sober, and you're going to shut up about your chicken shit problems. I'm worried about the guy who doesn't know if he's going to live through the night, because that's the guy that's got a real problem. At least you got a solution for yours. So I had chemo and radiation for 42 days. When I left that hospital, I looked like Uncle Fester. I had put about 100 pounds. I had rings into my eyes. And I don't know if anybody's had chemo and radiation at the same time. They said it was going to be painful. It was far more hideous than they described. But it brought me closer to God. And I said then what I say now when I have things happen in my life. God, if it brings me closer to you, bring more suffering. Because it's worth it. If anybody's in real pain right now, I'm happy for you. Because we have a solution for you, and you'll be that much closer to God on your other side, I promise you. This too shall pass. I got out of the hospital, and I was broke, and I spent another year in a shelter. So I spent my first 2 years in a shelter. And I was crazy. Some would say I still am. I washed dishes for 4 years. And when I was about 4 years sober, I got fired from the only job in sobriety I've ever been fired from. And a lady said, David, you're too smart to be washing dishes. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself to get out and get a real job. And I found out, lady, she had 25 years sober, and she'd been listening to me talk about computers in AA. And that's all I talked about was computers. I was computer crazy. I was building, like, computers in my sleep. I was just out of my mind with computers. I had nothing else to do. I mean, I was sober, and then you got another 16 hours of the day. What are you doing? That's drinking the other time. I built computers. I don't know what else to do. He said, boom, here, give me a dollar. It's a computer. So I went to my sponsor. I'm like, what do I do? He goes, get a computer job. I go, but I don't know anything. He goes, listen, you've been lying your whole life. Just make up a resume and give it a shot. I'm not counseling anybody to do this, but it worked out well for me. I went in, I lied, they gave me a job, and I got promoted 11 times in 1 year. And here's the thing, the book says that fear is the evil and corroding threat. It seems to steal more from our lives than anything else. I never thought I was smart enough to work in an office. I'm taking over the planet. I thought I was an idiot. I'm a genius. Go figure. I got promoted 11 times there, 11 times there. By the time I was 7 years sober, I was a global chief information officer, which means I ran lots of big stuff all over the world, with lots of people jumping out of my way. Where at the work, it was bright. I come in, it was like 48 hours. So, good morning, Mr. So-and-so. I'm having a briefcase. And you go, oh, it's beautiful. And my sponsor was getting worried about me. And at this point, I was being asked to speak quite a bit. I was using my real name. And the danger there, you know, first edition, right before it, you know, they talked about this earlier. When writing or speaking publicly about alcoholism, right, we urge each of our fellowship to omit his personal name, designate himself instead as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm John Doe from Anytown, USA, member in good standing of Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group doesn't matter. I'm a member of AA. I travel the world. I've been to AA in 146 countries. It's all one big smeared out density of love. Right? One thing I've noticed is a lot of people think that the home groups are gangs. We're not gangs. We're a fellowship of men and women who share experience, strength, and hope, and etc. All right, that's enough of that. So I spoke at like 1,000 meetings over the next couple of years, and I was so proud of that. And I had my sponsees ripping my discs and putting them up on the web, and I was just being a real, you know, I was being an idiot is what I was being. And I got the car I always wanted, and I noticed I was driving by the AA coffee shops. I wouldn't hang out with these people anyway, but I wanted them to see me in a new car, you know. And I remember when I was 9 years sober, I got up in front of a convention, and there were a lot of people there, and I was bragging about how many times I'd been through the steps, because, you know, we were doing a lot of institutional work, and I was working with a lot of convicts. Still do. And I said, tell them how many times with the steps. My sponsor got up, and at that time he was about 80. And he goes, excuse me, Dingleberry. He goes, have you actually finished your ninth step? Then sit down! Hand to God. After the meeting, we had a very serious talk, and he said, listen, kid, you're about as close to a drink as anybody ever met. I want you to put the gag on. You're done speaking in AA. It's not about you. It's about God and the newcomer. You need to learn that lesson. And I want you to liquidate everything you have, because you're still a thief, a cheat, and a liar, because you still owe people for money from years back. You still owe this government money. It's time for you to get square with God, get square with your fellows, hit yourself up, and be a member of AA. This is that 9 years sober. Greatest thing I ever did. I sold... The applause is for God. I sold the car, sold the house, liquidated my 401k. Within 2 years, I had everything back. 10 times over. But more importantly, I got to stay sober. Right? Money is easy. Doesn't seem like it is in the beginning. Money's the least of your problems. You do the right thing, you'll have money. Do the right thing. That's the important thing. So my sponsor didn't let me speak for a number of years, thank God. And, you know, luckily for me, you know, I went to work. I got my dream job. I went back to college. I got my master's degree. I started working on my doctorate. And I got hired by the largest insurance company in the world. It rhymes with AIG. Big company. And it was like the dream shot. And I had like 6,000 people working under me. And as a condition of employment, this is how God works in your lives. As a C-level executive, you have to be anonymized on the web. I'm talking about Facebook before. I don't exist on the web. I'm an anomaly. So when I got a call from Kansas who tracked me down over the web and then actually found my phone number, I was shocked. Because there are vendors. I mean, I have a big budget. I mean, I write a lot of big checks. Thank God it's not my money. I'd be very nervous. So you'd have a better chance of getting the President of the United States on the phone than getting me. And he had my cell phone number. It took him like 3 years, but he got me. And the day my sponsor took the gag off was the day Kansas called me to come down here. So I consider myself privileged beyond my ability to express to be here. But I told him it had to be under my sponsor's condition. Is now, he's 91 now, and I don't know how much longer I have him for. I'm going to go home and see him. I'm going to go home and see him in a couple of weeks. But God, I love him so much. He said, as long as I remember, a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, his standing order to me is, never forget that, you know, that you're the pipe, you know, you're not the water. The farmer doesn't grow the crops, like somebody says. He plants the seeds, he tills the soil. God does the growing. You know, the surgeon doesn't cure the patient. You know, the surgeon, you know, creates an antiseptic environment, removes the disease, and, you know, allows God to come in and do his work. And that's what we are in Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not the message. I am not the solution. I don't want anybody looking for me. I'm a knucklehead. You know, I could be having a very bad day when you find me on the phone. I have them typically. I want you looking for Alcoholics Anonymous in any town, USA. Alcoholics Anonymous is far and away the greatest thing that's ever happened to me. And, you know, I don't know what to say. My God, I used to be a bum in a box in Brooklyn with a perpetual fart. I teach in London in the morning. I'm flying to Tokyo tomorrow. Every time I try to quit my job, they keep giving me more money. I don't need anything, and I just keep coming. And it's all because I drive knuckleheads and I smoke crack in the back of my car. You know? So I don't know if I've made any sense at all tonight, because I don't even know what time zone I'm in, but I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I swear to God, I wish I could take my heart out and pass around to you just how good you people have been to me. Nobody has ever hurt me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'll leave you with this. Not everybody that smiles at you is your friend, and not everybody that's mean to you is your enemy. I love each and every one of you. God bless you, and thank you for having me.